This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Well, welcome on into this Friday, February 28th edition of Sports Talk. Hope you are enjoying your Mardi Gras. We are chilling in studio, having our own parade today.
And are we?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
What's happening?
Steve Geller, Jeff Nowak, Charlie Long hanging out till 7 p.m. tonight. At 8 o'clock this evening, we will have tip-off of Game 2 between the Pelicans and Phoenix Suns. And what a game last night for the Birds. Man, I was shocked seeing Zion Williamson in action. Still limited, too. Limited action. Putting up his first triple-double of his career.
I mean, I wasn't shocked because that's who Zion is. Like, that's why when people say, get rid of him, trade him, I'm done with him.
But look how good he is.
But then
right.
You watch a game like that and you're like, that's why he's Zion. That's why we talk about him the way we talk about him. And it's just infuriating that you only get the glimpse of that like once every three or so months. He was stunning. He was incredible. And he's in great shape, which is what makes the fact that he's not going to play tonight infuriating.
A bummer.
Because, not that I want them to keep winning. You know, that's the only problem is they've won three games in a row and suddenly they're like, they got the... You know, they went from being tied for the worst record in the West to now I think they're third from the bottom and the fifth from the bottom overall. Like, you know, so your hopes of Cooper Flagg are going up in smoke. But that was always going to be, I think we talked about this a couple weeks ago, of like, they're not going to tank. They're going to try to go out and win these games, and they're a good enough basketball team that they're going to win enough of them to be frustrating in that way.
They're trying to actively tank tonight, I feel like, with Zion getting that return to competition, reconditioning,
yeah.
And CJ McCollum is just out for rest.
Yeah. I don't know if they're trying to lose, but they're definitely doing a good job of making it what's going to happen.
We will have Kelly Olynyk back and Bruce Brown no longer on the injury report, so they're good to go tonight.
Goodness.
I will say Kelly Olynyk has been a hell of a surprise for this team since they acquired
Kelly's
him.
A good player. You know, I've watched him since Gonzaga, right?
Yeah,
you know,
right.
I mean, he's been a very good player in this league for a while. He was on the Celtics for a while. I watched a good number of Celtics games. You know, he's just a stretch five. You know, Carlo's been playing pretty well. He had a nice dagger three the other night, Carlo Mackovich, last night, I should say. I would be surprised if they keep Kelly Olynyk around just because, you know, someone's going to pay him, and why would he?
Well, he has another year left on his contract.
Yeah, but they could. I mean, I don't know. We'll see how that goes. I NBA contracts are so weird.
Yeah, right.
So we'll see. But either way, like I think Bruce Brown
he does
Brown
seem to
has
have some
much,
chemistry already with the team, so maybe they keep him around.
I think he fits anywhere, and that's why he's probably not going to be here because there's going to be interest in him. Like I think there's going to be rosters, there's going to be teams that are like, all right, we can use a stretch five. And I just don't know if this, I keep thinking Celtics, the Pelicans are going to be that. I think Bruce Brown makes a heck of a lot more sense for the Pelicans.
See, he's the free agent.
Yeah, I think they're going to extend him. I think they're going to find a way to keep him around. Because you just need wing defenders. I think he's very similar. Like, he and Najee Marshall are very similar players.
Yeah.
I don't think they really wanted to let Najee Marshall out of the building. You know, inconsistent three-point shooters, but they're going to defend. They're going to get out in transition. You know, they're athletic. And I think they are missing one of those guys coming off the bench, right? They just haven't. I think throughout this season, that's what you've seen in stretches of, like, man, they could be a good defensive basketball team, but they're missing, you know, a Herb Jones-looking person or a Najee Marshall-looking person who can come in and just be physical and beat somebody up. And that's what Bruce Brown is. So, no, I mean, you know, there's college basketball going on. You know, LSU is unwatchable, the men at least. So that's not entertaining.
Ladies just had a tough loss against Bama.
Yes, they did. They did. But I still have no worries about the women's basketball.
Right. Program. Come tourney time, they'll be back in full throttle mode.
But it'll be something to watch. Like, I am intrigued in seeing how the Pelicans played on the stretch, because I think you're kind of getting closer to what this team's going to look like next year with a few young players baked in. But I don't know.
Well, it's just tough right now, too, because you don't have DeJounte Murray around and Herb Jones is out as well.
He's going to be gone for a while. DeJounte's probably not going to be ready until midway through next season with the Achilles.
So. That hurts, right.
Yeah, and they're playing Antonio Reeves more. I think he's been playing pretty well. Hawkins, I've been kind of disappointed with Hawkins this season. I thought he was going to take a leap, and he's just been inconsistent. You know, I think I wouldn't say it's a crisis of confidence, but he doesn't look like the shooter that I remember.
No, definitely hasn't been draining those threes.
Yeah,
man.
And he has to be that to be an NBA star, to be a startable NBA player. He has to shoot at like a Klay Thompson level efficiency, because he doesn't have the, you know, kind of the traits that you look for at the two guard spot. Right, like, he's not big enough to throw out there and be a defensive anchor. He's not a good enough ball handler to play the one. So unless you are a knockdown shooter, like, they leave you open, it's three every time. It's just hard to find a spot for him. And I think that's why you're seeing them go to Reeves a little bit more, because I think he has more upside as a defender. But it's disappointing, because when he gets hot, it's like, you know, the ball leaves his hand, it's, you know, it's going in. Like, he is that type of shooter. I just don't know. I've been a little disappointed, and this has come from someone who's obsessed with UConn.
So. Right, and Hawk was 4-for-9 last night, 2-of-7 from three-point range.
Yeah, and I mean, like, he has his moments, but the consistency hasn't been there, yep. And you want to see his game kind of expand a little bit. And I don't know. I feel like this has been a step. Like, I thought he took a lot of really positive steps as a rookie. And I just don't, in what I've watched, I haven't watched as many Pelicans games this year as I thought I would going into the year, you know, because I thought they were going to be a really entertaining basketball team. I really did. You know, like, the first game of the season, I was like bought in. And I was like, okay, this is what it's going to look like. And then DeJounte Murray broke his hand, and then everything fell apart. But
yeah, it was kind of like when we saw Eric McCoy go down for the Pelicans, that, you know, that early on game for DeJounte.
Right.
Yeah, things never really recovered from there.
No, so we'll find out. I feel like every time we do these shows, we start with this really depressing riff on the Pelicans. And it's never intended. It's just like, ah, dang it.
It was positive, though, last night seeing Zion get his first career triple-double.
It's cool to see things go well for that guy, right? Like, I every time he comes out and has a game like that, the entire NBA takes notice. Like, the entire NBA community takes notice. They were like, he still exists. This is the guy.
I'm always like, damn you for making me believe in you again.
Like, everyone wants Zion to be Zion. Like, the entire league benefits from Zion being Zion. Not just the Pelicans, but the Pelicans definitely benefit because people start paying attention to the Pelicans again.
Hope you're listening to us as you're getting ready for parades tonight, setting up and whatnot, getting out there. We've seen definitely a ton of foot traffic coming into the studio today. Give us a shout on the Oaken Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line, 504-260-1870. Looking at the bottom of the seventh inning right now, LSU baseball up 5-2 Kansas State. We'll obviously be keeping an eye on that as well. Taking a break here on WWL. Be back with more. Stay tuned right after this on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk and the NFL Combine going on right now with the workouts, position groups today. I know that the tight ends were working out today, as well as, what was it, D-linemen or linebackers? I think linebackers, sorry.
Sounds right to me. The Underwear Olympics.
Yeah, there you go. Making a little bit of a buzz, though, running back Ashton Jeanty at the podium was asked about Would you mind playing for the New Orleans Saints if they selected you with the 9th overall pick?
It would be dope. I mean, growing up watching Alvin Kamara play, you know, taking some things from his game. I think we're very similar in our, you know, contact balance. And then, you know, also Kellen Moore, you know, being a former Boise State Bronco, you know, that would be a great opportunity.
A great opportunity. And yeah, that was a lot of people's, I think, initial connect the dots there. You got a new head coach who went to Boise State, Genty, a Heisman Trophy finalist, also a Boise State Bronco. But we have Alvin Kamara, and I don't know how much of a pairing and other needs there are right there.
Yeah, I don't think either of those things is why or why not you would choose not to pick Ashton Genty. Or I don't know if that made any sense, but like, I don't think you're making a pick at number 9 overall with like, the head coach likes his school. You know, like, that's a bad reason.
If they needed a running back.
Well, but again, and also, I don't think that you look at Alvin and say, like, we couldn't possibly add to this running back room because we have Alvin. Like, Alvin's 30 years old. I'm more than happy with the Saints adding to that running back room. I just think number 9 overall is not where you do that. And just history would show you that the top 10 is not where you should be adding running backs. I mean, the same thing's true for tight ends, but, you know, I agree with Ashton in the sense that I do think they are very similar running backs. And he pointed to contact balance. And
I thought you were going to agree that it would be dope if they played together.
I would love to watch Ashton Genty in a Saints uniform. He would put butts in the seats, no question, the same way Bijan Robinson put butts in the seats
right
to watch him on the Falcons, but Does Bijan Robinson or Kyle Pitts, for that matter, we're talking about Tyler Warren, Bijan Robinson, Kyle Pitts, Ashton Genty, like, will any of those four players turn a bad team into a good team? No. They will turn that bad team into a bad team with a really good tight end and or a really good running back, and that's what the Falcons are right now. So I just think that's a great example of why you shouldn't do that. All that said, like, Ashton Genty is a great player. He reminds me of Alvin Kamara. When you watch the clips and he talked about the contact balance, and that's why. Because he doesn't break tackle so much as tacklers just fall off of him.
Yeah.
Like, and he does not look like they were even there at all. And that's a very unique ability. And I would love to see him on the Saints.
We're going to take a break and we'll get into more of that with Justin Mello, who covers the NFL for the Draft and Network. Ask him about what he thinks about Ashton Genty possibly going to the Saints at number 9 and a whole lot more about the NFL Combine and the upcoming draft. Stay tuned right after this on WWL.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy!
The march to spring training and opening day is upon us. Rob Radford from Baseballs and Boring here, and we'll have you covered every single day with podcasts that aim to educate, entertain, and inform you as a baseball fan. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We were just talking about the NFL Combine in full swing right now in Indianapolis. Justin Mello, who covers the NFL for the Draft Network, helping us break all that down and much more. Justin, how you been doing? Thanks for the time, man.
The pleasure's all mine. We're day 2 of on-field workouts, and we're already having a blast.
We just played a clip of going to the break before. Ashton Jeanty was talking about how he'd love to come play for New Orleans. It'd be dope to team up with Alvin Kamara and obviously a Boise State, former Boise State guy in Kellen Moore. But what's your thoughts about a possibility of drafting a running back with the 9th overall pick in this draft?
I don't think the Saints are in a position to do that. Now, look, certainly Alvin Kamara is, you know, probably getting close to the end of his line, and they're going to need a succession plan eventually. But I don't think that they're in a position to do that number 9 overall. This roster has got enough holes as is, and they're in the market for some premium positions, right? An offensive tackle at number 9 as well, within the realm of possibility. I would say a wide receiver, a cornerback. You know, maybe one of the quarterbacks, if they slip, I think would garner consideration. But an edge rusher, certainly with Cameron Jordan not getting younger himself. So they're just in the need of too many premium talents to go ahead and take a non-premium position like a running back.
Yeah, and you know, quarterback is an interesting position because I feel like everyone has kind of settled on, hey, Cam Ward's at the top of the board for whoever it ends up being. And I do want to ask you more about that in a moment. But, you know, Shedeur Sanders and Jackson Dart are two guys that I feel like are going to end up a lot closer together in the final draft, kind of when it all gets laid down, than they might be right now in a lot of projections. So I'm curious what your reads are on both of those guys. And obviously there's a lot of guys who aren't working out at the combine. So this is really more of a question of just your assessment of those two quarterback prospects and where you could see them going on draft day.
Yeah, they're very different prospects. You know, when you watch Shedeur Sanders play, and he said this at the podium on Friday, but I think the selling point with him is the attributes that he offers from the neck up. He is a smart quarterback, high football IQ, pre- and post-snap recognitions, is very accurate, knows where to go with the football. Some of the physical stuff is what leaves something to be desired, right? I don't think he's got terrific size for the position. I would describe the arm strength and the velocity as average at best, whereas Jackson Dart certainly offers you some of the physical off-script playmaking ability. I think he could make every throw. He's good at escaping the pocket and kind of creating as one of those, you know, off-script magicians. When it comes to Jackson Dart, I'll level with you and I'll be honest. I've got serious concerns about his ability to run and operate an NFL offense. You know, I think in recent years, we've gotten in trouble with some of these guys. You know, you look at the Colts a couple of years ago with Anthony Richardson, very different, but similar in the sense where we fell in love with the physical attributes and maybe ignored some of the football IQ stuff, and that hasn't worked out there. And then certainly with the Tennessee Titans, it was at, you know, 33 overall in the second round. But with Will Levis, I see a lot of parallels between Will Levis and Jackson Dart, where you kind of fall in love with all the physical attributes, you fall in love with some of the stuff that he does off script. When it comes to just snapping the football, reading the defense pre and post snap, that's where he gets himself in trouble. And for me, you got to be careful with the physical stuff. I know, you know, with Shedeur, some of it, there's plenty to be desired there. But I do appreciate the ability to kind of go through the progressions and make good decisions. For me, he's significantly better prospect than Jackson Dart is.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Will Levis there, and obviously you know a lot about the Titans. You cover the Titans. And you know, so what do you think they're going to do at quarterback? Do you roll with Will Levis again? Are the Titans in a position where they could even pass on a guy like Cam Ward, knowing the questions at quarterback are there? Do you trade back? What do you think? What is your read on what the Titans are going to do at the top of the draft?
I think my prediction as of now is they're going to kick the can down the road, try to trade that number one pick. There's been a lot of smoke between them and the New York Giants. I think that's their ideal trade partner in their mind, because they can pick up the capital, they can move to 3, and then they're guaranteed to get either Abdul Carter or Travis Hunter. the read that I'm getting on the Titans right now is they're very early in their rebuilding process. They've got a first-year general manager in Mike Borgonzi, a second year of, you know, a VP of football operations in Chad Brinker, who really isn't in his first year of power. This is very much a new regime. I don't think they're very impressed with the quarterback prospects. I don't think they're interested in tying their job security to them. As of now, they've got great job security, right? They're in their first year. I think they're not sold on the quarterbacks. They know that they've inherited an incredibly weak roster. I think their plan is to trade the pick, acquire more capital, rebuild for at least a year, and then, you know, they'll be in a good position presumably next year to with more capital to take a quarterback and with presumably a stronger quarterback class. Now, what they do at quarterback, if they do that, that's the ultimate question, because I don't think, you know, even if they plan on quote-unquote losing, they can't sell that fan base on another year of Will Levis. I mean, that stadium was empty near the end of the season. I can't imagine going into week one saying, this is our quarterback. I think they go with a veteran bridge guy in free agency. They would love to get a guy like Derek Carr, funny enough, as we're here on the New Orleans. You know, with Carr, it doesn't sound like he's going to be available. But remember, Titans head coach Brian Callahan, he coached them previously in Oakland. He was his quarterback's coach, the then Oakland Raiders. So I think that would have been plan A. Doesn't sound like that's going to be able to come to fruition. Maybe it's a Kirk Cousins, you know, who by all intents and purposes is going to be available for $1.25 million. Not enough people are talking about that. When the Falcons cut ties with them, he's going to be available on the Russell Wilson deal. Because they owe him so much guaranteed money. So I think their plan is to trade that pick and go with a short-term bridge option.
You know, Justin, you mentioned Derek Carr. Curious, what's your impressions of him? There's been so much anger with the fan base here surrounding him. Obviously had not a healthy season last year, really hurt him as well. But just curious, overall, what do you feel about Derek Carr as a quarterback in this league?
I think there's plenty of blame to go around for how it's gone these last couple of years. Do I think he deserves some accountability? Absolutely. And look, the injuries are not something you can control per se. I'm referencing just his on-field play. I think there are times where he would tell you himself that he could have and should have played better. But I do think there's enough blame to go around. You know, the offensive line has sort of been in flux for a couple of years there. They haven't completed that transformation. That has certainly limited his ability. I would say weapons at wide receiver, I don't think they've had enough outside of Chris Olave in recent years. And certainly, you know, Rashid Shaheed played well this past year before he got hurt. But I don't think they've had enough at the pass catching positions, generally speaking. And then honestly, at head coach, you know, I never loved talking down on a coach, but I thought they moved on from Dennis Allen a little later than I would have in the process. I don't think they and I know Carr had a good relationship with him, but in terms of promoting, and moving this offense into the century, if you will, I don't think Dennis Allen did a good enough job there throughout his time. Now, I did like Clint Kubiak. I thought that was a good hire this past year. I just don't think things went well, especially with, you know, when injuries start. I mean, they all got hurt, right? Carr and both the receivers, and they've had some issues on the O-line as well. First year left tackle, who I thought played well, but certainly you could see that O-line has been in flux. So it's a new leaf. I really appreciate the head coaching hire they made. I think it's a brilliant offensive minded hire, and I'm curious to see where things go. I think there's still hope for Carr to salvage this thing in New Orleans.
Yeah, and, you know, just kind of going further on that, well, what were your thoughts on Spencer Rattler's rookie season? Obviously, 0-6 isn't ideal. It was not a great scenario. You didn't have any receivers. Your offensive line was constantly hurt. You know, it's a situation where, you know, a rookie quarterback's not going to scoff at experience, and these guys need to learn and grow. What were your thoughts on how he looked as a rookie?
Well, when you're drafted as late as he was as a quarterback, I'll say this. We sometimes forget, I think the first baseline expectation, again, when you're drafted where he was, is to just prove that you could play the quarterback position in the National Football League. And I think he did that. I think Spencer certainly showed that he belongs in this league. My personal evaluation is I see high sort of upside as a backup quarterback, one of the better backup quarterbacks in the National Football League. Now, we shouldn't be making any guaranteed determinations after 1 year. I'm not quite ready to say that he could develop into a, you know, even a mid-tier starting quarterback. I don't think I quite saw enough to make that declaration, but I certainly saw enough to say that he can play quarterback in the National Football League, and I think that he's going to develop into a high upside backup. And there's a role around the league for those guys. I mean, there are guys making a living off being that high upside backup, and there's not a lot of them. You know, we tend to think they grow on trees, and they don't. There are about 7 to 10 good backup quarterbacks in the NFL that can come into a game, run the offense efficiently, get you through it, and win you a football game if the rest of the team is playing well. I don't think he's going to carry you, but I don't think he's going to be the reason you lose a lot of games either. So I was really encouraged by what I saw from Spencer Rattler in year one. I think he'll play quarterback in this league for a very, very long time as a high upside number two.
Sticking with the Saints for me, Justin, just curious, you look at this draft, what are the good nose tackles that could be available for the Black and Gold to select? Because if they're making this move with now Brandon Staley taking over the defense to a 3-4, I just don't see one on the roster right now. So who are some of the guys that maybe early on in these first, second, third round of this draft that could be a possibility for Saints?
Well, I'm not always a fan of taking one super early, but I do think there are a couple guys that could play the nose position for you. The best one, in my opinion, and I believe he's a pure nose, is Kenneth Grant, right, from the University of Michigan.
Right.
I think he's a three-down nose tackle. I think he's got enough upside as a pass rusher that he's going to be able to stay on the field. Now, you're not taking him at number 9, certainly too early. But, you know, if the Saints are interested in trading down, and I know that hasn't gotten a lot of chatter, but if they were to trade down in that even that 18 to 20 range, that's where I'm comfortable starting the conversation on Kenneth Grant. I do think he's going to be a first-round pick, probably in the 25 to 30. I think, the Buffalo Bills will look at him long and hard, and a couple other teams in the mid to late 20s. But Kenneth Grant is the best pure nose tackle in this draft, in my opinion. There are a couple others as you go on. Certainly Alfred Collins from Texas, you ask about a second-round option. He's going to look really, really good at the combine. I mean, the numbers from the measurement process were incredibly impressive. So I think he's probably the second-best nose in this class. Deion Walker is going to be the one that's very divisive from Kentucky. You know, if you saw him at the Senior Bowl, there were reps where you said, this guy's a first-round prospect. Then there were reps where you said, I don't think he's a top 100 player. He tends to play a little high, foregoes his technique on occasion. But when he gets it right, he looks like one of the top 20, 25 players in the class. So it's a good class from a nose tackle perspective. One that I like late is Georgia's Nazir Stackhouse. You know, I tend to prefer to get my noses a little bit later, unless they have true three-down potential, because then you've got to question the value. If you can only play two downs, that's not a guy I'm very excited about taking in the opening 64 picks. But someone like Nazir Stackhouse from Georgia, if you're into the two-down thing, I think round 5 or 6 is when he's going to be available and can offer you an early down role right away.
You know, Justin, I feel like I ask you this every year, and I always try to be as vague as possible because I think that's the best way to get the best answer. And so if you're looking at, you know, guys who are currently being talked about second, third round that you think are just being kind of criminally slept on, is there anyone that kind of stands out to you that, you know, right now isn't being talked about nearly as much as they should be and, in your opinion, will be by the end of their rookie season?
Well, how about the safety from South Carolina, what he's doing right now? I don't know if you've had a chance to look at the numbers, but Nick Amanyori, the safety from South Carolina, he just leaped 11-foot, 6-inch broad jump,
wow,
okay, and a 43-inch vertical. Okay, that would have been the highest vertical out of any participant last year. I'm pretty confident it's going to be the highest this year as well. It's currently in the lead. I don't think anyone's going to beat it this year. So this is a guy that's kind of been talked about, a second-round guy. I'm not convinced he's not the best safety in the class, period. You know, I know that's been going to Malachi Starks out of Georgia. But mind you, I could cop out here. A lot of teams see Starks as a corner in this class, which I don't know is if that's public info, but a lot of teams see him as a corner. So, but if he is a safety, I still see a scenario where Nick Amanyori is the first safety selected. Again, a lot of second, third round talk. I think there's a pretty good chance he sneaks into the first round. Another who I'm a big fan of who will work out tomorrow is the wide receiver from Utah State, Jalen Royals. If you saw this guy at the Senior Bowl, he was creating easy separation. He was probably the most physical receiver down in Mobile. I thought he looked the most pro-ready out of any of them. He knows how to use his size, and he's got great arms, length, and he's very physical right there at the line, knows how to create separation. People, they're trying to flag him. A lot of it was happening within the contact window, so he knows how to get open. And then when you get the ball in his hands, I'm a huge fan of what he does after the catch. He is so dangerous in open space. Again, that's a guy that I think should be getting top 30 buzz. I look at a team like the Buffalo Bills. I look at the Kansas City Chiefs that need more help at receiver.
Just curious to mentioning a guy that's likely to go in the first round, I thought possibly top five, in LSU's Will Campbell. What's been the buzz around him? Because I feel like mock drafts are just all over the place on where he's going to end up.
I still think we're trending with him being the number four overall pick to the New England Patriots.
Okay.
I think they'll have an interesting decision there, but it really depends on what they see his position being, right? As you know, there's been some, you know, tackle guard conversation surrounding him, but I do think he should be allowed to quote-unquote fail at tackle first before I would move him in, and I don't think he will fail. I think he should play left tackle. I think he's going to thrive at that position. Look, Mike Vrabel, old-school football coach, they desperately need one to protect Drake May's blind side. The conversation for them is going to be him or Mason Graham at number four, and in fairness, I could see them going in either direction, but It's so obvious how badly they need a left tackle there. He's the best one. He should be the first one off the board.
Justin, what can folks find at the Draft Network right now that's gearing up for the NFL draft coming up soon and everything going on at the Combine right now?
Well, a ton of content from the team. They're down in Indianapolis, live tweeting all the results, all the measurements and all that. The Twitter account's been blowing up. On the website itself, we've got daily articles, winners from every position. We've got standalone articles on standout prospects who deserve more attention. Mock draft dropping every Sunday night, Monday morning. There will be a new one dropping this weekend. We just updated our top 100 prospect list over there, so top 100 big board pre-combine edition. And I'm doing interviews, daily interviews with the prospects. I'm up to 100 already. I sat down with 100 prospects in this class. I'm probably going to finish around 220, 230. You can go to the Draft Network. I've got ones with Ashton Jinty, who you asked me about earlier, Will Campbell. I've got one set up with a couple of the LSU guys. I did Savion Jones already. So whether you're a Saints fan, an LSU fan, or an NFL draft fan, we've got you covered with daily content.
Awesome stuff, Justin. And before we let you go, real quick, we had a texter asking us, what's your grade and what are your thoughts on Jalen Milroe and where you think he'll end up going?
I do think he's going to be a second or third round pick. You know, it's an interesting because you remember the Jalen Hurts conversation from a couple of years ago, right? Where, oh, I don't know, you've got to mold your offense around him. Well, the Philadelphia Eagles did that, and they've done it to great success. They just won the Super Bowl. So that's going to be the conversation around Jalen Milroe. Which team is going to be bold enough to commit? Because you do have to commit. There's a developmental process as a thrower of the football, no doubt about it. Some of the tape this year was rough as a pure thrower. But as an athlete, I mean, the sky's the limit. If you commit to this guy, you saw the strides Lamar Jackson has made, the strides that Jalen Hurts has made. If you commit your offense, and he can get better as a passer, there's no doubt about it. I think early on it might be a little rough. You're going to have to commit to the process, but certainly the sky's the limit from an athletic perspective. And if you pair him with the right offensive coordinator and you take a patient approach, it can work out in the long haul.
Patience. There's no patience in the NFL. Always appreciate your knowledge, Justin. Thanks for sharing.
Pleasure's all mine.
Justin Mello covers the NFL for the Draft Network. You can check out all his great work there. Also follow him on Twitter at @JustinM_NFL. Taking a break here on Sports Talk. Be back with more of your calls right after this on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk at WWL. We got it all for you from sports. We are also your home for Mardi Gras. Fat Tuesday, join the crew of WWL for wall-to-wall coverage of the greatest free show on earth. We'll broadcast live from New Orleans and Company on St. Charles Avenue, right in the heart of the party. The fun starts 8 a.m. Tommy Tucker and Linda Cassidy. Also at 11 a.m., Newell Norman and Scoot featuring Ashley O on the roving mic. Catch real-time coverage of Zulu and Rex and all the sights, sounds, and excitement of Mardi Gras from 8 a.m. to 2 or 3 p.m. Brought to you by our amazing sponsors, Bromart, Home Bank, Logo Express, Lamarck Ford, and our presenting sponsor, LCMC Health. keeping you well this Mardi Gras season on WWL. Checking in on the LSU Tigers in this game. Kansas State putting up a heck of a fight in the Frisco Classic. We are tied 5-5 in the top of the ninth inning here, so things are getting tight in this matchup. Looking forward to seeing how this one ends here. We might be going to extra innings to start off this tournament today. The Tigers are in action right now. You can check it out on our sister station, the Bet 92.9 FM, 1350 AM, and you can check it out also the Odyssey app. Just type in the Bet New Orleans and follow the action there. We're going to take a break. Coming back, we'll be getting into some more basketball talk with Kurt Hellen, the lead writer and managing editor for NBC Sports. And then in the 6 o'clock hour, Super Bowl champ Scott Shanley, all things black and gold ahead. Sound off on the Oaken Heart Jewelers Talking text line 504-260-1870. Up next, news right here on WWL. Welcome back to the crew of Sports Talk. We're rolling on here. The LSU baseball team, we got some extra innings, folks. Top of the 10th, tied 5-5, them in Kansas State. And boy, it was a game-saving play. A double in the gap with a runner on first, but Josh Pearson throws it to Stephen Milam, who then guns the runner down on the plate. So we are heading into extra innings here, tied up at 5-5. Keep you updated there. You can listen to the game on our sister station, 92.9 FM, 1350 AM, or also on the Odyssey app. We're going to be getting into some NBA talk after our first break. Lead NBA writer and managing editor for NBC Sports, Kurt Helan, will join us talking about the new-look Zion, who has been impressive since coming back from that hamstring issue. Had a triple-double last night, the first of his career. And we'll review some of the standings in the Eastern and Western Conference. What's going on there? I know your Celtics are keep churning away and just counting down the days till the playoffs really begin, so this true season starts for them.
Yeah, this time of year in the NBA is like, all right, can we just get to the playoffs? Like, if we had 20 fewer games, would anyone complain? Like, if the season ended right now, would anything really change? I mean, you look at the Western Conference and it's like, yeah, the Suns maybe were like, oh, we might be able to, but they stink. The Suns stink.
Well, after seeing them last night, they're not going nowhere.
I mean, they got all these players. They stink. Like, they're the 11 seed right now. No one cares about them. The Blazers, the Spurs, the Pelicans, the Jazz, they're all going nowhere. The Eastern Conference, you look at, okay, the Bulls are 23 and 36. They're the 10 seed. Like, do we really need to keep playing these games? 27 and 30 are the Heat. They're the 8 seed. 29 and 32.
Jeff has called the season. We're going to the playoffs on the weekend.
There's only 6 teams in the Eastern Conference over 500.
Right.
There's 15 teams total in the Eastern Conference. Only 6 of them are over 500. 10 of them qualify for postseason basketball. Anyway. But yeah, I mean, like, the Cavs are the 1 seed, Celtics are the 2 seed, Knicks are the 3 seed, Pacers, Bucks, Pistons. Those are the teams. Like, but we're going to play 20 more games to figure this out. I don't know. I think that's one of the issues I have with the NBA is they play too many games.
Like, well, people will see that about the MLB season as well.
Yeah, but baseball is a little different because of starting pitching, right? Like, the concept of starting pitching means you have to play more games, because if you eliminate 60 games from the MLB schedule, then you probably, you know, I guess you could have fewer starters, get maybe less rest, maybe more off days. Maybe that's the answer. But I don't know. The NBA, just like, it's so monotonous. And it's like college basketball. One of the reasons I love college basketball is it feels like every game means something.
Right.
Right? Because you're always playing for seeding and, you know, okay, if you're not going to make the tournament, you could always win your conference tournament. In the NBA, it's like, all right, the Wizards, this season has been over for them for months. For the Pelicans, this season has been over for them for months. And we're just kind of rolling through it.
Speaking of teams in the Eastern Conference, has Brandon Ingram even played a game for the Raptors yet?
That's a good question. I don't know.
I feel like he hasn't.
I mean, I don't know what the motivation would be to get him out there if he's not 100%. Let's see. Brandon Ingram. Let's look it up. I have not been really following Brandon since he went to the Raptors.
But Charlie just gave me the no in my ear.
He is not. The last game he played in the NBA was December 7th against the Thunder.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Justin, what was Toronto even doing making that move?
Well, they extended him. So, right. I mean, that's what they were doing. They were getting him for the future. I mean, their season's over. So, I don't think anything he would have done this season would have changed anything. They extended him sight unseen. So,
as the Cajun Cannon would say, stealing money.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about that. Like, they traded for him for the future. He's still 27 years old. So, I mean,
good luck, Toronto.
Yeah, good luck. Good luck in Toronto. Maybe it took him a while to get his passport. That's why. That's not
Kelly Olynyk had a little hold up with his visa, so that took him. He missed the game because of that.
Yeah, I don't know, but you know, I'm rooting for Brandon. I like Brandon. You know, it's just his game just doesn't seem to fit the modern NBA, or at least not regular season NBA basketball, where all you take are threes and layups, right? But I do think that, you know, that's why I thought maybe he would end up on a playoff team, but if he wasn't going to play, then it didn't make sense for him to end up on a playoff team. And I think whatever injury he's dealing with was more significant than just like, okay, he's not going to play. Because I think that he's the type of guy that you get into a 7-game series playoff defense, and suddenly he's getting the same shots as he was getting in the regular season as he's getting to the playoffs, right? Whereas everyone else who's getting wide-open shots all season is now getting contested shots. He takes those contested shots and he makes them. And you need that guy in the playoffs.
Sure.
That guy's not going to help you win 50 games in the regular season, though.
He's also not going to help you on the bench.
That's true.
looking at this LSU-Kansas State game, top of the 10th inning, runners on first and second, and nobody out for the Tigers. So hopefully they can scratch out at least a run here and put the pressure on Kansas State.
I had that in the 9th inning, too.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, they didn't score.
Runners in scoring position were a problem last game for the Bayou Bengals as well, but they ended up pulling out the victory. But I remember Jay Johnson, you know, definitely wasn't happy with that, was saying it was a negative, but was trying to stay positive because they still won the game. But against Dallas Baptist was the one they left, I think, 12 runners in scoring position.
The real DBU?
The real DBU. There you go. Checking in on our Oakwind Hard Jewelers Talking text line. We got Jimmy and Gretna been hanging on. Saying happy Mardi Gras, Jimmy. What you up to?
Hey, man. Happy Mardi Gras. Look, we're at the parade route. We got the tarp out here in Mid-City. Last night we got here early. I paid the guy. He was a homeless guy, keep in mind. I gave him $25 and a bottle of some booze. He walked off. He was supposed to watch my spot. So we're back out here, dude. Traffic's bad. We're hunkered down for Endymion. We're listening to WWL, and I'm wearing my Derek Carr jersey out here, dude. I'm the toast of the town. People are beeping at me. They're excited. Okay, the last part was a joke, okay?
I was going to say, you actually have a Derek Carr jersey?
You know what? High five. Yeah. 70% off at the local you-know-where. You know, I'm not going to give a free plug to anybody unless they give me a check. But, hey, look, Derek Carr is the quarterback. We know. I wouldn't be opposed to a trade. Maybe draft week, whatever, get a fourth or fifth if somebody was willing to do that. If not, I mean, I think he's going to be on a short leash with Kellen Moore. I know this much. Derek Carr is not going to generate season ticket sales, sadly. From a business standpoint, I just don't see the fan base being like, oh, my God, this news is going to really make me want to re-up on these tickets instead of just buying for $10-$15 on the secondary market. But, look, y'all have a happy Mardi Gras. Yeah, they got a bunch of free ladders on St. Charles Avenue. I don't know what that's about. You guys go have at it, okay? Have a happy Mardi Gras.
Cheers, Jimmy. I don't know.
Lifetime supply of caution tape if you want to stroll down Canal Street.
I wanted to ask him there. It's like, does he think that putting Spencer Rattler as the starting quarterback is going to start selling tickets?
Probably not. No. So a couple things. One, people keep saying, hey, maybe they'll just trade him for whatever. He has no trade clause. He's not getting traded. If the Saints want to get rid of him, they'd have to cut him. Like, Derek is not going to be like, yeah, you can send me wherever you want. No. If he wanted to go somewhere and that team was willing to trade for him, sure. But that's if we saw that play out with the Saints, and the Saints didn't trade for him. The Saints waited out the Raiders. So it's not going to be a trade situation. We can move on from that. But I agree with Jimmy. Like, I don't think anyone's going to be, oh my gosh, thank goodness, we got Derek Carr back. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's not the best option available, because it is the best option available. And at the end of the day, the only thing that's going to get people excited for a sustainable amount of time is winning football games. Like, we can get the most exciting person in the world in a Saints jersey playing quarterback. If you win two games, that's not going to drive ticket sales either. So, yeah, I mean, I get it. I know people aren't thrilled about Derek Carr, but
can the Saints somehow rekindle that magic from week one and two?
Yeah, you know, maybe, probably not. But I was talking to someone about this yesterday. I was like, you know, the real true sin of the Dennis Allen era was not that they lost a bunch of games. It was not that they didn't make the playoffs. It's that they were bad and boring. You can be bad and interesting. You can't be bad and boring. You can be good and boring. You can be bad and interesting.
Yeah.
You can't be bad and boring, because that is a recipe for people for apathy, right? And so I think there is a chance that even if this season doesn't go great for the Saints, that they are at least interesting with a fun offense.
See, I feel like the Pelicans are bad this year, but they are entertaining.
Yeah, I disagree with that.
We'll get into some more of the NBA talk. Kurt Helin after the break right here on WWL. Welcome back here to Sports Talk. Steve Geller with Jeff Nowak. Now welcome in Kurt Helin, lead NBA writer and managing editor for NBC Sports. Thanks so much for the time, Kurt. How you been doing?
I've been doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it. How we had a big night last night. Zion Williamson, his first career triple-double. Definitely seems to be a different player since he's come back from the latest round with his hamstring issue. Unfortunately, though, they're still limiting his minutes, and he won't be playing game two of a back-to-back this evening against the Phoenix Suns. But overall, seeing him on the court and what he's able to do, it's been a huge positive for this team. We're just hoping that we can keep him healthy, and it carries into next season at this point, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Well, first off, you don't need Zion to beat this version of the Suns, man. They've been pretty terrible lately, despite all the talent on their roster. Look, where you are, it's just, you know, and the 76ers are kind of doing the same thing in the East. There comes a point where it's, even if you could make the push, what's the point?
Right.
Well, I can fight my way to the 10 seed, get with the lottery, because I think with the Ingram trade, you guys really, on paper, this sets up like a really nice team. I've long been a Trey Murphy guy. Obviously, Zion's come along. Herb Jones, there's really good pieces. You draft somebody, tops five, six, four, wherever you land, right? You get somebody else good to put into that rotation, and something's there. Like, this team should be better than it was, and then like you said, it just really comes down to keeping Zion in particular, but everyone healthy next season. And what we've seen the last couple of weeks is promising. I kind of get it. There's just no reason to push him at this point in the season, man. I'm not throwing my best pitcher in, you know, September if we're out of the race.
Yeah, you know, there's been a lot of conversation over the last few weeks of, you know, the face of the NBA and all this stuff going on with LeBron talking about it and Anthony Edwards. And you know, I look at Zion as a guy that, you know, very well should be in that conversation of, you know, every time he does something, people want to talk about it. Like, he has that level of star about him that feels like it should be rising into that conversation. He's just not healthy, and he's never on the floor. And you know, I'm just curious, what are your thoughts on that whole conversation? And, you know, LeBron's comments yesterday were interesting, and like, it's kind of just a weird energy around the NBA. Everyone's mad all the time. Everyone's talking about why is everything so bad? No one's talking about the good things that are happening. What is your kind of take on that? Because it does feel like this is a really weird era of basketball, in that, you know, no one's happy about it. It's not about the stars. It's about what's not happening, or what's happening too much. Many three-pointers, too many rest days. You know, what is your take on all that?
Yeah, it is a weird dynamic with where both the analytics and the math of an 82-game schedule and keeping your stars healthy is, along with the fact we're just kind of in a transition period. I mean, I was about to say, like, LeBron and Curry are fading out. Yeah, well, LeBron, Curry just were up 56 last night. So, like, they're not fading that much. LeBron's looked great lately. But the transition is coming to what's next, which, you're right. Absolutely. Look, it's going to be weird because Wembanyama is, in 2 years, he's going to be the best player in the league. He just is. He's already, in his second year, he's already top 10. And you guys watch him. Doesn't it feel like Neo in the first hour of The Matrix?
Yeah.
He hasn't even figured it out yet. But he's not, personality-wise, as much as I like him, I'm not sure if he wants to be that guy. I'm not sure if it's Edwards. Zion, you're right. Zion just comes with it. Whatever that indescribable it thing is, he absolutely has it. And if he can change the conversation from, who's he going to be injured, to how well he's playing, where he's doing, I mean, that one power dribble dunk from the dots the other night was ridiculously athletic and fun to watch. And when he's doing that and you're talking about that, you can just see the star power coming through the screen. So I would love to see it. He's just, I don't, you know, it's no secret with any of us, like including him. You just got to stay on the court.
Looking, you were talking about LeBron, this Lakers squad now, the addition of Luka Doncic. The Pelicans are going to see them soon coming up, actually, Mardi Gras Day on Tuesday in L.A. What have you been seeing from this Lakers squad now that Doncic has arrived and it seems to be, you know, getting assimilated? They're on a win streak now and he's kind of found his footing over there.
Is that game in Los Angeles or New Orleans?
In Los Angeles.
It would really be helpful if it... really be helpful if it were in New Orleans and the guys went out on L.A. Doncic enjoys a good beer and a party. Like,
right.
You know, could have caught them a little. I'm based in L.A. They look really good. Like, you knew LeBron and I and Doncic were going to figure it out. Look, elite players tend to figure it out. Really high IQ guys like those two guys figure it out. And so they're already starting to play off each other. Austin Reeves has been fantastic, and sneakily they're playing as well defensively as this unit can. And I have questions about them when you get deep into the playoffs, second round, conference finals, or, you know, whether that defense will hold up or whether I can really target Luka and Reeves and they don't have a big man, you know, with all due respect to a guy you know in Jackson Hayes, they don't really have a great big man, you know, cleaning up everything behind them. But, man, they're fun, they're good, they're playing hard, they're big, they're physical. They are absolutely a threat to Oklahoma City in the West. And if you're one of the people who just doesn't believe in Oklahoma City, then the Lakers are one of the bets.
You know, I did see Jackson Hayes throw a ball off Naz Reid's face the other night. So he's still got that energy, that side to a Bob energy. But, you know, every time we have an NBA guy on, I always come up with an excuse to talk about the Celtics because I grew up watching the Celtics. And, you know, I was checking out your power rankings, and I think we're in agreement here. It's a weird dynamic in the Eastern Conference and honestly the NBA in general, because you look at, okay, the Cavs are going to be the one seed. You know, they're owning that seed. They have the best record and they're going to have the best record. And the Celtics, I don't think they're sleepwalking so much as they're kind of waiting for the flip to appear, and they turn on the defense and suddenly, you know, no, like when they are playing defense at a championship level, I don't know if you can beat them. And it's just kind of a strange thing because they're not going to have the best record in the East, but I don't know how you can look at anyone but the Celtics as, okay, until you knock them off, they have to be the favorite to win this whole thing.
They are, because A, I know they can do it because I've seen them do it. And I haven't seen, we do this in sports. I mean, in general, Jalen Suggs can't win a big game, guys, until he did, you know. And so we do this with everyone, but Oklahoma City has not done it on that level. Cleveland has not done it on that level, and Boston has. So there's something to that, and I just think when fully healthy, their versatility, their ability to play big and play small, the problems Porzingis creates on top of the fact that Jason Tatum's going to be third or fourth in MVP voting, and a lot of nights Jaylen Brown's the best player on the floor for them. That depth, that versatility, and the fact they don't really roll out a bad defender until maybe Pritchard hits the floor really makes them tough to beat. But I don't think the gap between them and Cleveland is big at all. And if they're not firing, if your Celtics are not firing, they're in trouble. Because I really think this is I don't think it's quite a coin flip, but it's maybe 60-40 Boston. And if Boston's at 100%, that percentage swings quickly.
Looking at the Eastern Conference, a team that's not going anywhere, Toronto Raptors, you mentioned Brandon Ingram, the trade over there, just curious, what the heck's going on with him, the fact that he hasn't suited up at all? What was Toronto thinking making the move? Is it clearly just something they wanted B.I. for the future?
They did. They're tanking, so they weren't going to bring him out there. He might win them games. You know, obviously he's getting right and getting healthy, but there was never any intention of him playing this season.
Gotcha.
They're looking at the draft. So I'm really curious what that looks like. They've assembled, look, Scotty Barnes is good. They've got RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quickly and a lot of kind of switchable wings. And now you add Ingram in there and there are a lot of good players. A lot of quality NBA, you know, above average. You know, Barnes, I think, has been an all-star. I have to look off the top of my head, but he's like that level player when he's healthy, and Ingram's been an all-star. but I'm not quite sure how it all fits. And I think that's like, it doesn't fit traditionally, and that doesn't mean it can't, but I'm just not convinced that all of this is going to work well. It seems an odd, I'm not sure what the pecking order is, but they've got next season to figure it out. They've got some time, and if somebody can come in there and be Kenny Atkinson to the Cavaliers for them, where, no, this is how it's going to work, this is what we're going to do, and put all the pieces in the right place, they've certainly got talent. Then you just got to keep Ingram healthy. So good luck with that.
Yeah, speaking of another guy who, honestly, similar players in Kevin Durant and Brandon Ingram. Brandon Ingram got traded. Feels like Kevin Durant, it's only a matter of time before he gets traded. Although, it seems like he could have ended up in Golden State, and he kind of vetoed that this season before the trade deadline. I'm just curious, what do you think happens with Kevin Durant? Because that whole situation in Phoenix, you mentioned it there, just it's falling apart. I mean, you have the stars. It's not like they're dealing with injuries. They're just not winning. Kevin Durant still seems like he's playing at a caliber that a team should want him on their roster. I'm just curious, what do you think happens with him this offseason?
He gets traded. It is time to blow that mess up. You don't have to be a body language expert to watch that team and go, oh man, look at the vibes. Like they it just feels off. They have the highest payroll in the NBA. And they are not going to make the play-in. That's bad. That's real trouble. So there's going to be changes this summer. I think they're going to retool everything. They're not going to, despite the dreams of some people out there, they're not trading Devin Booker because that would have that would be Doncic in Dallas to the Phoenix fan base. Like, they would just be livid. So I don't think they're going there. But I would be shocked if Durant's on the team next year. It'll be interesting to see where he goes. Miami is a possibility. Dallas, I know, has interest. There'll be some other teams. Look, there'll be a lot of teams should kick the tires on him because, like you said, at the end of the day, Kevin Durant is still, at his age, he's still really good, and he's still one of the great bucket getters this game has ever seen. He is just a guy who can go get you a basket when you need it most, and that's like he has rings because he was the MVP of two finals with the Warriors. Like, he's that good.
I'm looking at this Western Conference, the top, obviously OKC has been running away with things. Do you think there is anybody come postseason time that can give them a run for the money to make the finals?
I personally am a big Oklahoma City believer in the sense that, look, they lost in the playoffs last year. They realized they weren't quite physical enough. Someone out and got Isaiah Hartenstein, who brings the physicality from the opening tip. They can put him out there with Chet Holmgren, and it's really deadly. But more than that, Jalen Williams came back more physical. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander came back more physical and looks like he's going to be an MVP. So I think it's all coming together for them, and this is their year. But I will tell you that just the other night I had a conversation with a scout front office person for another team who is convinced that they're regular season paper tigers that will come apart in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And so that's where Denver, when they're clicking, they've still got Jokic. They need Jamal Murray to be 2023 Jamal Murray again. But they're right there. These Lakers right now, I think, are in that mix. I think both of those teams are a threat to Oklahoma City if they really, like that loss to Minnesota the other night shook me, where they blew the 16-0 run for Minnesota at the end of the game. They doubled Shai, take the ball out of his hands, dare anyone else to beat them, and they didn't. Now, Holmgren and Hartenstein didn't play in that game, but it was just concerning that in those moments, nobody else stepped up. And so I still have just enough doubt to wonder if Dallas can get in there, or not Dallas, Denver can get in there. Dallas will not be getting in there this year. Denver or someone else can sneak in.
Gotcha. Always appreciate your time, Kurt. Thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Anytime, guys.
Thanks, Kurt Helin, lead NBA writer and managing editor for NBC Sports. You can follow him at Basketball Talk on Twitter. Checking in on that LSU baseball game. The Tigers have an 8-5 lead now, top of the bottom of the 10th inning. Sorry. The Kansas State has two out, but two on. So this one is coming down to the wire.
Yes, sir. It sure is.
I thought you wanted to say something.
I don't have the ability to watch it. I don't have a subscription to D1 Baseball, so I'm following the ticker just like you.
Gotcha. Taking a break here on Sports Talk. Want to hear from you. 504-260-1870 on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. What you doing this Mardi Gras, folks? You out at the parade right now listening? Join us and have a little fun on the crew to Sports Talk as we get ready for Mardi Gras Day here on Tuesday. Looking forward to it all. Be right back after this on WWL. Back here on Sports Talk, LSU baseball, an 8-5 winner over Kansas State. The Tigers getting the W in extra innings. We'll be back in action tomorrow. That game, we'll have to see what time that one first pitch for that matchup is. 4 o'clock first pitch. And who are they playing tomorrow, Charlie? Nebraska. Thank you, sir. I was like all over the place with the Tigers right now. And that, unfortunately, Jeff and I are watching the live stats updating. And Charlie, yeah, you have the subscription to D1 Baseball and got to watch the game.
Yeah, it was fun, man. It was a crazy ending. The 10th inning was, you know, Daniel Dickinson gets the clutch hit. And of all the hard hit balls today that weren't actually hits because of great defense by both sides, a little nubbler gets through and all of a sudden you go up 8-5. Kaysen Evans, once again, he pitched on Wednesday. He closed out that game against DBU, comes back onto the mound today to pitch the 9th and the 10th innings and slams the door shut on K-State and gets his first win in an LSU uniform. So congrats to Kaysen. He's been fantastic early this year.
So 6 of the 8 RBI for LSU came from Dickinson.
He's got like 21 on the year already. Wow. I mean, he is at a ridiculous pace. The Utah Valley transfer, for all the people that were asking Mike and I, you know, in the offseason, oh, why are we getting this guy, kid from Utah Valley? That's why. Daniel Dickinson can play.
Coming up big for the Bayou Bengals there. Tonight we got the Pelicans back in action, taking on the Phoenix Suns again in a back-to-back in Phoenix. That game will be tipping off 8 o'clock here on WWL. AM and FM also have pregame coverage. We'll be cranking up at 7:30. I know we were talking about some things in the break, Jeff, and you mentioned fifth-year options coming up for the class of 2022 right now. What will the Saints do with the likes of Chris Olave and the Trevor Penning?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You talk about fifth-year options, and it seems like, hey, it's a no-brainer to pick these up. When you actually look at the numbers associated with these contracts, it's pretty crazy. Like, these are not just like, oh, yeah, this guy is pretty good, so we're going to pick up his fifth-year option. Like, a couple years ago, the Saints didn't pick up Cesar Ruiz's fifth-year option. They still intended to keep him.
Sure.
They just felt like it was a better deal to extend him than it was to pick up that option. And, you know, you look at, okay, so Chris Olave, right? I think they want to keep him around. They're going to want to extend him. But to pick up his fifth-year option, and if they don't pick it up, people are going to be like, oh, that must mean they're ready to move on. Well, I mean, it could just mean that they don't think he's a $20 million a year wide receiver, because that's what his fifth-year option would be. That would be a one-year contract at $20.5 million, and that's the lowest possible fifth-year option. So there are several tiers that you can fall into. The first level is what Trevor Penning and Chris Olave will fall into. That's the basic. Then there's a playtime tier that if you played a certain number of snaps, then, or games rather, then you bump up a tier. There's another tier for making a Pro Bowl, and then there's a fourth tier for making multiple Pro Bowls. Only three players on this list, this is the 2022 first round class, that have those multiple Pro Bowls. That's Sauce Gardner with the Jets, Kyle Hamilton with the Ravens, with the Ravens, and then Tyler Linderbaum also with the Ravens. So they had a pretty good draft if you look at the Ravens. So, I mean, do you think Chris Olave in 2026 is worth paying $20.5 million for one season? That seems like a lot when you consider, I mean, is his extension going to cost you more than $20.5 million a year? I highly doubt it.
And I'm obviously worried about the multiple concussions as well.
Well, right. I mean, you know, honestly, if there's an argument to be made to pick up that option rather than lock into an extension, it's because you don't really know. Like, if he has another concussion this year, and, you know, these could be career ending. So that's the, actually, in my opinion, the best argument for why you would go this route is that way. Yeah, it's going to be more costly, but you don't lock yourself in anything long term if these concussions do end up being kind of a career ending issue.
And a guy like Trevor Penning's also in that $20 million range.
Oh, yeah. Trevor's $21.6 million. There's no way. Absolutely no way. The only guy less likely to get his option picked up is Kenny Pickett. on the Eagles.
Kenny Pickett.
They could, in 2026, if the Eagles wanted to pick up Kenny Pickett's fifth-year option, he was drafted by the Steelers,
right,
they'd be paying him $31 million.
Woo-wee.
So I don't think that's going to happen. But,
Super Bowl champ Kenny Pickett.
Yeah, Trevor Penning definitely. I think there's a chance you extend him.
Sure.
You're not picking up his option.
Going to take a break here on Sports Talk. We shall return with more right after this on WWL. LSU a winner today. I want to mention Daniel Dickinson's first 2 weeks with LSU baseball. 32 at-bats, 12 hits, batting .375 with 21 RBI.
Is that good?
It's pretty good.
Okay.
Not too bad. Not too shabby.
But Utah Valley.
Utah Valley.
What is Jay Johnson doing going to Utah Valley for a transfer? Daniel Dickinson rocks, man. He's going to be one of those pieces that you plug right behind Bear Jones in the lineup. And if they walk Bear, which they've done a lot this year, Daniel Dickinson will clean it up.
Tigers getting that 8-5 victory today. Dickinson counting for 6 of those runs. Pretty impressive stuff for the Tigers.
Pretty good.
They getting the job done again, and we'll see what happens the rest of the week at the Frisco Classic. Gearing up next hour, we'll be talking to Super Bowl champ, also Saints pregame and postgame analyst Scott Shanley, get his thoughts on the Saints coaching staff, along with what he experienced at the NFL Combine, if he remembers those days. We're going to take a break here for the top of the hour news and get right back with more sports talk after this, so stay tuned on WWL, your home for the New Orleans Saints, New Orleans Pelicans, LSU, and also everything Mardi Gras. Be right back after this, after the top of the hour news on WWL.
Durant for three. No. That's Z with the rebound.
That's it.
There's the triple-double. First career, 90 seconds to go.
And on a minutes restriction.
Yep. Z maintains the dribble. Sizing up Richards again.
That's what he wants.
Right shoulder down. Lefty layup.
That's
good.
What he wants. He sees Nick Richards, and it's like, let me eat.
He did indeed eat. Zion Williamson, his first career triple-double last night in Phoenix, played 31 minutes, got 27 points, 11 assists, 10 rebounds. Unfortunately, the bad news now, he won't be playing this evening when the Pels take on the Suns again. That's an 8 o'clock tip-off right here on WWL.
It's plenty of time to enjoy that performance. He can go watch the highlights and be like, that was me. I did that. Now I get to rest.
Another rough one, too, for the Pels. No C.J. McCollum this evening, either.
Yeah, they're going to. I mean, if the Suns can't beat the Pelicans tonight.
No Zion, no C.J. Woo.
The Suns should just quit.
Unless C.J. goes off for like 50. He pulls a Steph tonight.
No, C.J.'s not playing.
I'm sorry. I meant Trey.
Yeah, Trey. Trigger. yeah, no, it's just three wins in a row. This is not the time I wanted it. Why couldn't they do this at the beginning of the season?
No, yeah, it's like a lot of folks texted me. It's like, what are they doing right now after last night's game? Yeah.
They're just actively ruining their draft pick. Like, where would they be today if the season ended? So they are 16-43. So they have the second worst record in the West by quite a wide margin. The Spurs would be next up on that list. They're 24-33, so they're pretty safe there. I don't think the Jazz are not going anywhere. And then in the East, the Hornets are 14-44. The Wizards are 10-48. Raptors are 18-41. So the Pelicans, they might, if they keep winning games, they might climb ahead of the Raptors. Right now, they would be in the fourth slot from the bottom.
9 games in February, Jeff. Zion Williamson's averaging 25.3 points, 5 assists, 6 rebounds a game. Definitely nice to see him at least in action, considering all the time he spent hurt. Here's what he had to say after last night's win over the Phoenix Suns.
Zion, you talked after the San Antonio game about setting standards and establishing what this team can be for the rest of the year and moving forward. Do you feel that's starting to happen right now?
We took a step in the right direction. Now it's just being super consistent with it.
What's it like for you personally to get your first career triple-double?
It's dope. But it's funny because there were so many times where I feel like it could have happened, but I never, forced the issue on it. But tonight, my teammates was like, nah, you got to get it tonight. So I had to thank my coach and my teammates for that.
Don, the way you take advantage of the space that others give you is always really impressive. Like when Nick Richards backs off a little bit, kind of dares you to take a couple jumpers, but you don't listen to that. You just go right headfirst to the rim. I mean, what do you think about in those moments?
If the defender keeps backing up, at some point, once I
get my forward momentum going. He's not just going to stop and jump up. He's going to try to go back, and I feel like that's kind of tough to block a shot while on the way back. So, you know, me and Corey Brewer talk about it a lot, just eating up the space. If the defender gives you space, don't settle. Just attack the space.
You think being able to finish that left hand kind of throws off?
It helps. It helps a lot. But, you know, that's something that I always work on, though.
You were sitting on 9 rebounds for a little while. You knew that last one was coming in for you, and you heard the joy from your teammates when you got that 10th.
It was funny. Like I said, I don't force the issue. If I didn't get another rebound, it would have been almost could have had it. But fortunately for me, got the lucky bounce, got the rebound.
You know, two of your other teammates had double doubles as well. Carlo Makovich got his first career one tonight, and Eve Misi got another one. So
yes,
really, it's just been a real team effort here, especially in the last week. Is that what you're feeling on the bench?
Yes, sir. Going back to your first question, we took a step in the right direction.
When it comes to you being out on the perimeter and then having to fly back into the paint, you know, what's it like going up against a guy like Tyus and switching off onto, you know, KD and Book?
At the end of the day, all these guys are NBA players. You know, Book and KD, their resume speaks for itself. You know, even Tyus Jones, a great point guard, knows how to get his stars going. But at the same time, he knows when he needs to kind of get a bucket for himself as well. So, you know, it's just, for one, is giving the players their respect, and two, just, you know, moving those puppies.
I know you've been in the league for a while, and you've obviously always had confidence, but is this a night like tonight kind of a reminder of what you can be, what you could, still got ahead of you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, these nights, I think, are definitely big for the confidence and just, like you said, a reminder and who I am.
Zion Williamson after the Pels win over the Suns last night. They'll be back in action again this evening, but not Zion, unfortunately.
Yeah, but, you know, I see a lot of people texting in all the time being like, trade Zion, I'm tired of Zion. No, you can't. And like, the reason is, like, okay, he is the excitement on this team. Like, you can get excited about sure. Trey Murphy. Oh, CJ McCollum goes off for 40. That's exciting. When Zion has a night like he did last night, that sends shockwaves around the entire NBA is paying attention to the Pelicans in a way that is not the case. Like, fans pay more attention. Like, you are unable to avoid it. It's the type of energy, it is the type of impact that only a player like Zion Williamson can have for your team. So the idea, like, I don't think the Pelicans have even ever considered trading Zion because it doesn't make any sense to do that. Now, they have to figure out how to keep him on the floor, and they have to figure out how to make him a consistent piece for this team. But he is a superstar player, and you do not move on from superstar players unless you absolutely have to. Now, the Mavericks, notwithstanding, there was some weirdness going on with Luka that kind of prompted that. But either way, the point stands, like you weren't trading Anthony Davis until he was like, guys, you have to trade me. Like, I'm not going to give you an option.
Right.
Like, Zion is here. You build the plane around Zion. You mentioned
the plane. I was worried he was trying to force his way out when he started being late for practices and the plane.
Sure, yeah, sure. Yeah, but like, you build the plane around Zion. You don't sell Zion for plane parts that you need to assemble and try to figure out. No, like, it is, the plane is Zion. And, you know, it nights like that give you hope that, like, okay, can you get this over a consistent period of time? I don't know. But at the end of the day, that's what it has to be. You know, I watched a 3-minute clip on Twitter. Someone just posted it, and it's just like, you know, people trying to defend this guy, knowing exactly what he's going to do and failing. Like, he can do so much at the rim. Like, he's like a scrunched down version of Shaq. Like, he gets the ball close to the rim, and he can't do anything about it. People just bounce off of him, and it's just disappointing that we haven't seen as much of it as we should have at this point in his career.
I know, and those short glimpses, though, have been wonderful.
Yeah. He is one of one.
Yeah. Taking a break here on Sports Talk. When we get back, we'll get talk to a Super Bowl champ. Scott Shanley also does Saints pregame and postgame analysis. Get his thoughts on the Saints coaching staff and all things going on at the NFL Combine. Taking a break. Be back with more right after this. So stay tuned on WWL. Rolling along this Friday here on Sports Talk. Happy to welcome in one of our favorites on the show, Scott Shanley, Super Bowl champion, Saints pregame and postgame analyst. Scott, how you doing today, man?
Hey, I'm doing good.
NFL Combine going on right now. I know you were part of it a long time ago, you could say, but what are your memories from the Combine in Indy?
Yeah, it's an interesting event, that's for sure. I mean, it's you go in rooms and they just take out tons of notepads and write everything down about you. You walk around in tights everywhere, and you quickly realize it's a business. It's a commodity business of human beings, but it's an opportunity to make a lot of money. And I think it's an exciting time for guys and an exciting time for teams because, you know, not only do the guys train to go up there and run 40s and vertically jump high and those things. But I think it's a great opportunity for guys to impress teams behind the scenes, things that you don't see on TV that you can't measure. There's a lot of teams being interested more in players or less based on them sitting down and just getting to know them for a second. I think that's the most beneficial part of going to the Combine is getting to show teams your personality.
Yeah, I do think that is something that gets underrated because it's, you know, everyone gets caught up in the visual of it all. Like, oh, that guy's so fast, he's so agile, and oh, he jumped so high. But those meetings are very important. I am curious, you know, there are a lot of players, it seems, more and more every year who just don't work out at all. But they are there doing those meetings and those interviews, and that is important. I'm just curious, what is kind of your thoughts on players, especially the quarterback position, skipping out on those workouts? Because it doesn't seem like it's impacting draft stock at this point.
Yeah, I think there's one position that you notice is not really affected by not doing anything at the combine. It's the quarterback position. And a lot of times those quarterbacks, and I kind of understand it. I would like to see everybody participate who gets the invitation because, you know, it's an opportunity to perform amongst your peers and everybody on the same playing field. But I think when you're a quarterback and you're throwing to people that you don't have timing with, you don't have rhythm with, there's no familiarity, it's hard to look like yourself. And it takes quarterbacks in their own comfort zone to look their best. I think that's a lot of times why you see quarterbacks skip out on the combine events. They want to throw at their own facility with their receivers that they know and they're comfortable with. So I get that. But I think there's a lot of when you're dealing with, you know, 22 positions and plus kickers and punters and things like that, there's so many other needs that teams have that, the combine feels like it takes forever as a player, but I'm sure teams would love to have that thing be 2 weeks. Because, like I said, they get to sit down, they get to find out guys' personalities behind the scenes.
Scott, exciting time for the Saints. A new era starting with Kellen Moore, young offensive mind, taking over as head coach of the Black and Gold. Just your initial thoughts on the team adding him and also just some of the staff that he's adding, including a defensive coordinator in Brandon Staley, who was a guy that we know didn't have success as a head coach with the Chargers, but what he can do with the team as a defensive coordinator could be a valuable asset for Kellen, also a sounding board of a guy that's been there, done that before. Or as a head coach?
Yeah, I think it's always beneficial as a first-time head coach, a young guy, to have people to bounce ideas off of. And for guys, Staley was obviously the Rams defense coordinator. They won Super Bowl, and to your point, didn't have the same success with the Chargers. I think there's so many interesting storylines as far as, Kellen Moore hiring him, coming in. Obviously, he's coached three different spots recently with really good quarterbacks. What type of scheme he'll bring in, the same scheme, but what type of plays will he run with the Saints, depending on who the quarterback is? And by all accounts, it looks like it's going to be Carr again, but there's still a lot of offseason left. But going back to the defense real quick, I think the most interesting storyline with Staley is the conversion from a 4-3, four-down front to a three-down front. It's a huge change. I went through it when I was with the Cowboys. You know, Mike Zimmer, my first year here, he had the number one defensive league. Parcells was a huge 3-4 guy, made him switch to a 3-4. It is night and day. It really is. You need different body types on the D-line. You need different linebackers. Not to say that Warner and Davis can't do it. They can certainly play inside linebacker in the 3-4, but you don't really have a 3-4 pass rushers. And I think those are the biggest needs when you go to a 3-4 defense. So will Staley get those things in the offseason? Will he mold his defense to the personnel he has? I think that remains to be seen in the most interesting storyline when it comes to the defense.
Yeah, and you know, kind of bridging off that, I mean, if there was a position as you're looking at that and saying, hey, where should we focus in the draft? Like, where are the players that you can pull out of the draft that you could see being immediate contributors on this defensive scheme? Is there a position in particular that you think should be kind of a focus as you're kind of scouting? Like, okay, if we can pull this type of player out of the draft, that would help that transition greatly in year one?
Absolutely. I think for number one thing, when someone says they're going to a 3-4 defense, you better have outside linebackers. You better have guys who can stand up and get after the passer and then be athletic enough to drop back in the zone coverage. And I think a lot of offenses hate the 3-4 defense because of the versatility of those outside linebackers. I don't see anybody on the Saints roster right now as a true 3-4 outside linebacker. So I think if they're going to go this way and they're not going to be real multiple, but they want to be a 3-4, they got to get some outside linebackers in a 3-4 scheme. And then the other part of a 3-4 is you got to have space heaters inside. You got to have a big nose guard. You have to have somebody who can take up space and two gap and disrupt the middle of a defense. And so I think if you're going to a 3-4 exclusively, those are two things you really got to focus on.
Outside linebacker, maybe like a Zach Bond, a guy that was here. We just saw win a Super Bowl with the Philadelphia Eagles. As a fellow linebacker, just what did you think about his growth and development, obviously going to a team like Philadelphia, being with Vic Fangio and who really utilized his specialties?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, you got to give a lot of credit. You have to give a lot of credit to Vic Fangio and the Eagles scouting department. Obviously, they saw something in Zach and his ability to play in their scheme as an inside linebacker, which he really didn't play. So they saw attributes that he could do. Now, if they believed Zach would have been what he was, they would have gave him a 5-year, $100 million deal. But they gave him a 1-year deal, a prove-it deal. He went out there and played really great all year long. Obviously he played behind two great defensive tackles. Like I said, it's easier to play linebacker when you have two great defensive tackles in front of you. But Zach did an outstanding job of playing a position that he really hasn't shown much playing as far as coverage and playing in space and those types of things. So I think it was just one of those things where Zach took great advantage of the opportunity in front of him. And then at the same time, you know, I don't necessarily blame the Saints because it was like, you know, what were you going to do? You're going to play Zach ahead of DeMario Davis? It was just one team didn't have a need for him. The other team had a huge need for him, and he took advantage of his role.
Yeah, and I said to Steve the other day, I was like, hey, he's a free agent. You know? I
mean, bring him on back.
I don't see why you wouldn't. Hey, maybe consider it. But, you know, I do think it's interesting. The Saints go into this season, and, you know, people throw around the term rebuild. They throw around whatever. You know, I think that what gets lost in the conversation a lot of the time as people are saying, oh, the Saints should do this, the Saints should do that, is as you're a head coach, you're walking into a building, you have to sell. Hey, we're going out there to compete. We're going out there to win games. There's no selling people on like, we're going to lose a bunch of games this year. That's fine. It's like, no, you're setting up, you're taking the path that leads you to, hey, this gives us the best chance to win games. I'm just curious, as you kind of watch Kellen Moore go into that room and you know, you watch Mickey operate around him and some of the decisions that are being made, obviously the Derek Carr news that they're likely going to stick with him, that maybe rub some people the wrong way who might not be the biggest Derek Carr fans. But I think when you assess how decisions are made around the team, you have to always look at it like this. They're operating as a team that's trying to win the most games possible. That always has to be the mission. And I think a lot of the criticism is based on, well, why bother? Well, the players in the room are only going to go one way, and that is, hey, we're going out there fully committed to winning every week.
Yeah, absolutely. As a player, this league is a one-year business. Everybody can be cut at any time. So you're never going to convince a player in an organization to tank or take a dive so that the organization can get better the next year. Because if you do that, you're not going to be around. And that's just how it is. Now, I do think this, if there's any year to kind of hit a soft reset and kind of rebuild, it's in year one of a new head coach. Because everybody kind of, you buy a little bit of time. And I think there's probably a large part of this roster that needs to be overturned. They need to add depth. I think what you've seen over the last couple of years is, you know, Dennis Allen obviously inherits Sean Payton's roster. They kind of keep around this nucleus of guys for as long as they can, trying to, you know, kick the can down the road a little bit to stay competitive. Then you get into salary cap hell. They're going to get out of that in the next year or two. But I think if there's any time to hit kind of a soft reset, like we got to clear out some players, we got to get younger at these spots, we got to build depth at this spot, it's in year one of a new head coach. you know, like you said, everybody wants to win, but it's about doing the best thing you can do to set yourself up for, you want to win for 3 to 5 to 7 to 9 years and not just in your first year. And it's hard. It's hard for Mickey. It's hard for the Saints because, you know, they've been all in every single year and try to do what's best to win. Now, that being said, I don't think you necessarily have to strip it all down and have a bunch of rookies out there, because I still think the NFC South is a division that you can win games in.
Yeah, looking at a change of scenery for a guy that was here as head coach, Dennis Allen. What are your thoughts on him now being the DC over with the Chicago Bears? We kind of feel here that he's going to probably have good success with the Bears.
Yeah, it didn't surprise me. Obviously, Dennis was with us when I was there as secondary coach before he left to go to Denver, then Oakland. Dennis is a heck of a defense coordinator, and anybody who, you know, you go back to the Rob Ryan years, and Dennis kind of came in and was the savior of the defense in 2015, 2016 time frame. And then the Saints had Super Bowl caliber defenses, you know, under Dennis from 17 to 21. So Dennis is an outstanding defense coordinator. I think he's got really good players with Chicago. They have a franchise quarterback, new head coach. So it's going to be a great opportunity for him there. And I think, you know, Dennis is no doubt, nobody will dispute that he's not a great defense coordinator. So I'm sure those guys will love playing for him.
Yeah, I'm just curious, do you have any thoughts on some of the names that have been brought in? It's interesting to me on the defensive side for the Saints. It seems to be mining the college ranks, Terry Joseph out of Texas, Bo Davis coming down from LSU, Peter Sermon, former defensive coordinator at Cal. It kind of strikes me as like, hey, you know, you need to develop young players on this defense to have success over a long term, and who better to do that than guys who have been succeeding in college? I'm just curious if you had any thoughts on any of those guys.
Yeah, I obviously Peter played in the league, played linebacker, so I remember watching him play. I don't know a whole lot about the other guys. Obviously, Joseph is coming back home, being from the area. So I think it's exciting for those guys. You know, I remember when we brought Coach Orgeron from the college ranks. He was the defensive line coach for us in 2008, and they just have a different energy about them. And I think because the way you have to coach college guys and motivate and inspire them all the time and get them to play, and they have a little bit of energy and passion, I think those are the things that teams are looking for. And obviously Kellen Moore is looking for in year one. It did surprise me to see this number of college guys on the staff, but obviously I think they have a plan and they have some type of familiarity with them that they feel comfortable with them in developing guys in the league.
Scott, we are deep into Mardi Gras season now. Are you going to be around for any of the parades in town?
No, I wish, man. There's one thing I miss. I miss Mardi Gras. I always laugh because I tell people when I got to New Orleans and I was playing there, it was my first year there, first offseason there, and I'm like, man, where the hell has my mail been for this whole week? Why is the mail not going? And my neighbor says to me, it's Mardi Gras. I'm like, so? The mail stops? He's like, yeah, it's Mardi Gras. That was my first thing. Like, yeah, Mardi Gras is a pretty big deal around here.
Awesome stuff, Scott. Always appreciate your time. Thank you so much for joining us this Friday.
Yeah, absolutely, guys.
Thanks, Scott.
Scott Shanley, Super Bowl champ and Saints pregame and postgame analyst. Got a little insight there on some of the goings-on with the black and gold, and we'll see what they end up finding, mining, I guess you could say, at the NFL Combine going on right now. The NFL draft will be in April, so shortly around the corner there. We got free agency coming up, and I know everybody's talking about the team getting cap compliant, and the new league year is starting soon. I believe that is March 12th. Am I correct with that?
You are correct.
March 12th, they must be cap compliant, so they got some work to do in trimming down things.
Yes, yes. And, you know, that's kind of the biggest, you know,
obstacle right now?
I wouldn't say obstacle, but domino is Derek Carr's contract.
I gotcha.
Of like, that's where, hey, you're saying, hey, we're going to stick with Derek Carr, right? Like, that's the news is the Saints are likely going to stick with Derek Carr. Well, that's when you'll know for sure is if they either fully or restructure a large number of that contract, because that's the sign that he's sticking around. If they don't, then all options are still on the table.
We're letting the good times roll right into break. Be back with more sports talk. Stay tuned right after this on WWL. WWL, your Mardi Gras information station. Rolling tonight uptown, the crew of Hermes, D'Etat, and Morpheus. Did I just butcher that, Jeff?
No, you got it.
Slidell, we got the crew of Celine. WWL.com gets everything you need, plus check out the Mardi Gras safety guide. We'll tell you what you need to bring and what can't bring to the parades and where to find the first aid stations or just general consensus safety tips. Also, you can listen to Arthur Hardy's parade previews. Those are weekdays morning, 7:30, 8 and 8:30 in the morning, high noon, and on your drive home at 5 p.m. He'll tell you where the crews are rolling and what they're throwing and any changes along the way, all presented by LCMC Health, keeping you well on WWL. One of the bigger news stories today coming out for the NFL wasn't really around the combine. It was the fact that the LA Rams will, in fact, be retaining the services of quarterback Matthew Stafford. To me, this was always a head-scratching move. I know it comes down to money, but if I'm Stafford, I want to stay with a team that you kind of push the Philadelphia Eagles to the brink there and show that you are a legitimate contender there in the NFC. I just like what the Rams have done and put around him, and I thought it would be a shame to see Stafford move on to somewhere else, but he'll be staying with the Rams again next season.
Yeah, I think for Stafford, it's more of like, hey, I want a team that's committed to me in general, right? And it's, I think that's kind of like, hey, you know, I'm going to test my market. I don't think it ever really got serious. It was more so, hey, let's see what's out there, and not a ton was out there. You know, like, but there are teams out there.
There was those rumblings of that meeting that him and Tom Brady supposedly had by chance at a resort in Montana.
Yeah, that's what Jordan Schultz and Ian Rappaport were arguing about out here at a Starbucks in Indianapolis.
Media fight.
News fight. Yeah, just don't touch the hair or face. You're good. But, yeah, no, I mean, I think every team that doesn't have a quarterback is looking for a quarterback, and every team that has a quarterback seems to be trying to get rid of that quarterback, right? There's teams that always seem to be needing a quarterback. Like the Giants have been trying to find their quarterback for 10 years ever since Eli retired, or ever since they moved on from Eli, or whatever you want to say that situation was. You know, the Saints, who's their quarterback, right? Like, do I have a franchise quarterback? No, but I need to find a franchise quarterback, and I need someone who's going to get me where I need to go in the interim. The Vikings found Sam Darnold, but even they're just like, well, we drafted J.J. McCarthy. Right. We got to do something with that. So I don't know. Every team is trying to figure that position out. And, you know, the teams that have them feel like they have the ultimate advantage, and the teams that don't feel like they don't have a chance. So I understand why any team sees, hey, Matt Stafford's available, let's go kick the tires.
Right, but make that phone call, right.
But it also doesn't necessarily make sense at the same time. Like the Giants being potentially interested in Aaron Rodgers, that seems crazy to me. But if you're Brian Daboll and Joe Shane, you're like, we got to do something. We can't, you know, they're going to fire us if we have another 2-15 season. We got to find a quarterback somewhere.
Yeah, but will Rodgers be the guy that can actually save their jobs? I don't know.
Probably not.
Right.
But someone's got to be. You know, you got to try something. So
at least for Aaron, it wouldn't be much of a moving issue for him.
Yeah. Yeah, he probably wouldn't have to change apartments, right? You know, just figure out where the other locker room is.
Looking at the Saints situation, I know a lot's been made about Derek Carr. The talk's been that he will remain the quarterback going into next season. We know, like, Spencer Rattler will be around and in the mix still. What is the team going to do with a guy like Jake Haener? Does he seek, you know, some kind of roster elsewhere? Do they keep him around, too, as another guy they're trying to develop?
I mean, he's under contract.
Right.
Right? He's on a 4-year rookie deal, so you know, that he's never been cut, so that deal is still in place. So there's really no incentive to just cut him. You need camp arms either way. I mean, if he were to say, hey, let me figure it out, I wouldn't be surprised if they did let him cut him and let him test the market. But I don't know. I'd expect him to be here. I'd expect him to be here throughout minicamp. I mean, you need those arms. Like last year, they brought in Nate Peterman, right? Like you want guys in camp to throw the ball. So yeah, I mean, I'd expect him to be here. I think the question is really what happens with Spencer Rattler, because just like with Jake Haener last year, he is now in a situation where the group that drafted him, the coaching staff that drafted him and prepared him to be an NFL player, is no longer here. And as we saw with Jake last year, they kind of made it out like, hey, it's a equal footing competition between Jake Haener and Spencer Rattler. Well, when push came to came to shove, it was very clear that Spencer Rattler was the golden child of that situation, that he was going to get the first chance at every opportunity. And even when Jake got his opportunity, he got the rug pulled out from it at halftime. He obviously didn't play well, but neither did Spencer, and they allowed Spencer to play through a lot more than they did Jake. So we'll see how it goes. I would expect that I think they should draft a quarterback. Right. And so if you draft a quarterback and you got four guys in that room, I would be expecting Jake to get cut. But we'll see.
Speaking of the quarterbacks, they'll be in action tomorrow at the NFL Combine. They'll finally get their workouts going. Not throwing, we know Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward. Jackson Dart, though, and Jalen Milroe are some of the names that will be taking part and showing off their arms.
Yeah, Jalen Milroe didn't win me over at the Senior Bowl. But I still think, you know, and by that I mean he did not raise his draft stock in my eyes at the Senior Bowl. I still think he's the same guy that I watched in that he's got supreme athleticism. He's got little tiny hands, which is a problem. I think that kind of explains some of the accuracy issues. He's got to improve his technique. He's got to get better. But I would be perfectly fine with the Saints taking a run at him in the third, fourth, or fifth round. Like, wherever they find him, I think that he would be a great option as a developmental guy. I wouldn't want him as a late first round, early second round pick who I had pressure to play immediately, right? But again, like, if you draft a quarterback, then you're probably in a scenario where, yeah, we'll keep Spencer around. They'll say it's a competition, but at the end of the day, it's probably going to be the other guy because you don't draft a guy unless you feel good about him. So I would love for the Saints to draft a quarterback. I think the Spencer Rattler obsession, and we talked about this yesterday on the podcast, I think the Spencer Rattler obsession is a lot more to do with this intrinsic quality that Spencer has of not being Derek Carr than anything else.
Right.
Like, if Derek Carr was a guy that everyone was in love with, we would be talking about Spencer as like, yeah, maybe he could be a backup, not a starter. He's not a starter. He's not ready to start. Maybe he could develop into a low-end starter. He's not that right now.
I'm curious to see what Jackson Dart does, just because I feel like his draft stock or projections are all over the place, whether it's a late first or second round pick.
Yeah, I really don't know what to think about Jackson, but I also don't think it's necessarily something you're going to figure out at the combine, at least not from what we're going to see. Now, yeah. I think these conversations teams are going to have with them are going to be a big factor, but not the on-field stuff.
Heading to break, we'll be back with more Sports Talk to close things out right after this on WWL. Before we shove out of here, I want to remind everybody, if you want to see Paul Simon in concert, WWL's got your tickets to a Quiet Celebration Tour in concert at the Sanger Theater Friday, April 4th or Saturday, April 5th. Just go to WWL.com/contest for your chance to win a pair of tickets, but you got to register today. It's the final day. We'll pick a winner tonight at midnight. Celebrate the music of a lifetime with Paul Simon, courtesy of AEG Presents and WWL. Coming up 7:30 on WWL, we got Pelicans taking on the Phoenix Suns. Game two of a back-to-back. Pels won the game yesterday. Maybe they can make it four in a row victories after tonight's contest against the Suns. For Jeff Nowak, Charlie Long, I'm Steve Geller. Have a great Mardi Gras, everybody. Enjoy the weekend and the weather. Be talking to you come Monday. Have a great one and good night from WWL. Take it easy.